Mangold hunched closer to the Archbishop and pleaded, "If I'm supposed to investigate every aspect of this stoner phenomenon, I've got to get to that artifact. After all, it must be linked to stoner in some way. It's got to be. It could be the key to the whole situation." Warily, the Archbishop replied, "Martin Humphreys has quarantined the asteroid in which the artifact is housed. Not even the International Astronautical Authority is allowed to send investigators to it."
"And you're letting him get away with that?"
"Mr. Humphreys is a very powerful man. As powerful as the new morality? As powerful as you?" The Archbishop leaned back away from Feingold's eager zeal, as if the scientist's breath offended him. Feingold pressed, "You could get Humphreys to allow one man, just one scientist, to visit that asteroid, couldn't you?" For several long moments, the Archbishop did not reply. At last he asked, "Do you believe it's that important?"
"Like I said, it could be the key to the whole schmear."
Instantly, Feingold regretted his lapse into Yiddish. "Too eager," he berated himself. "Too damned eager. You'll blow the deal with your big mouth." But the Archbishop looked thoughtfully, prayerfully up to the ceiling. Then, turning his narrow eyes back to Feingold, he said softly, "I'll see what I can do, Dr. Feingold." Feingold restrained the impulse to leap out of his chair and click his heels in glee. The artifact might or might not have something to do with Stoner, he told himself, but it's real. It's out there, and I'm going to see it. He felt a thrill he hadn't experienced since he'd been a graduate student and first started doing research into the unknown. Chapter 7 Stoner, meanwhile, was driving a rental car from Atlanta northward, with Sister Angelique beside him and Yolanda Vasquez huddled in her hospital blanket on the back seat, still clutching her book in both arms. Automobile traffic on the interstate highway was sparse, although massive trailer rigs raced along in an almost unbroken procession in the lanes dedicated to truck traffic. Some of the rigs were 3 units long. When they'd left the hospital, Angelique had watched in silent wonderment as Stoner took her and the old woman out to a waiting taxi. He stopped the automated cab at the first car rental agency they came across as they neared the airport and smilingly talked his way into the sleek red sports sedan they now rode. It ran on hydrogen fuel, Angelique saw, and although its lines were flashy and stylish, its engine was unable to accelerate the car to more than 100 kilometers per hour. A fuel-saving measure, she thought, although she realized that it was also a method of controlling speeders and youthful would-be daredevils. Yet when Stoner stepped on the accelerator, the engine growled like an angry lion. Angelique was startled by the noise, but Stoner grinned at her. "A sound effect," he explained. "The car has a clean, quiet, efficient hydrogen engine, but the manufacturer makes it roar like an old Formula One racer to make people think it's got a lot of power under the hood." Angelique laughed to herself. "A sound effect," she thought. "A sop to the morons who need to hear vroom vroom when they drive. A substitute for testosterone." The rental agency clerk had asked for a driver's license, a credit card, and a travel authorization from the local transportation control authority. Stoner had shown her nothing, but she processed the paperwork anyway and rolled out the sedan for him.
"They'll track us down," Angelique said, raising her voice over the mock engine noise. "They'll find the records of this rental and—"
"There won't be any records," he replied. "As far as the rental company's files show, this car no longer exists." She lapsed into silence and studied his face while he concentrated on driving at exactly the highway speed limit. He seemed at ease, but his bearded face was unsmiling. God knows what's going on inside his head, she thought.
"Thanks for taking me out of that death trap," came the scratchy voice of the old woman in the back seat.
Stoner shifted slightly to glance at her in the rearview mirror. "Why do you call it that?" he asked.
"'Cause that's what it is. They see an old geezer like me and figure I'm not worth anything. I need a replacement heart, but they say I'm not worth the trouble."
Angelique turned in her seat.
"How old?"
Then she stopped herself and asked,
"We don't know your name."
"Yolanda Vasquez. And I'm 107. Be 108 in July, if I make it that far."
How do you do? Angelique said with stiff formality. I am Sister Angelique Dupree.
You're with the new morality, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Humph!
Stoner chuckled softly. You're not happy with the new morality?
Why should I be? They won't give me a new heart. Up in Selene, on the moon, they'd treat me with stem cell therapy, or nanomachines, or something like that. These religious do-gooders don't believe in modern science.
It's not that we don't believe.
Stoner interrupted what he could see evolving into a lengthy argument. What's that thing you're holding? A book of some sort? Yolanda Vasquez's wrinkled face tightened. Her eyes went crafty.
Some sort, she rasped.
It looks like an old-fashioned album, said Angelique, for photographs that have been printed on paper.
It's my scrapbook, Vasquez said, almost sullenly. My memories are pasted in its pages.
Stoner nodded. Must be very interesting.
It's private.
I see.
I'm sleepy,
Vasquez muttered, and she curled up on the seat and closed her eyes. Stoner drove in silence, farther away from metropolitan Atlanta, deeper into the rolling hills of the city's exurbs. Rows of tract houses dotted the landscape, each of them looking very much like all the others. Shopping malls slid past, virtually identical to one another. Newer housing centers of high-rise towers. For the flood refugees, Stoner realized.
Why did you take her with us?
Angelique asked, keeping her voice low so she wouldn't wake the sleeping old woman. Stoner made a small shrug. It was easier than allowing her to cause a fuss. Besides, I thought she needed some help. Angelique lapsed into a thoughtful silence. At last she said,
I didn't thank you for taking me out of the hospital.
You don't have to.
Where are we going? She asked.
He glanced at her. That's up to you.
Me?
Where do you want to go? The question startled Angelique. She realized she had nowhere to go, no one to turn to. Her life had been devoted to the new morality, and now they had made a prisoner of her, a criminal, a subject to be interrogated and tortured. I have no one, she knew, almost bursting into tears at the realization. No family, no friends. Then she looked up at Stoner's strong, gray-eyed face. No one but him, she thought. Chapter 8 Almost as if he could read Angelique's thoughts, Stoner turned onto the next exit lane and down the ramp that led off the highway, to a seedy-looking motel. Her breath caught in her throat.
He wants me. Despite all his talk about being more than human, he's a male animal after all.
You must be exhausted, he said. A night's rest will do you good. Jerking his head toward the sleeping woman in the back seat, he added, Her, too. Vasquez woke as he parked the car in the motel's lot, making Stoner doubt that she'd really been asleep. He took her power chair out of the car's trunk and unfolded it. Then the three of them proceeded into the motel's shabby lobby. Stoner took a pair of adjoining rooms for them, offering the young African-American woman behind the reception desk nothing but empty hands and a winning smile. They had no luggage, but the clerk took no notice of it. At Stoner's suggestion, she didn't even enter them in the motel's computer.
We're most empty, she said, smiling back at Stoner. Take any rooms y'all want.
The rooms were threadbare but clean. In a glance, Angelique took in the twin beds, the bureau, the wall-size video screen. While Stoner went to his room, she stepped to the connecting door and unlocked it. The blank face of the other door suddenly swung open, and Stoner was standing there, filling the doorway. Her breath gushed out of her. Sorry, he said. I didn't mean to startle you.
It's all right.
This place should be safe enough for the night, he said.
The security camera's in the lobby, Angelique said.
Pointing, she added,
And here in the rooms.
Stoner nodded. They won't show anything.
How do you?
He broke into a boyish grin. It's a gift. From her power chair, Yolanda Vasquez asked irritably,
When do we eat?
Stoner laughed and said, It's probably best if we eat here in the room instead.